The Ira Kaufman Podcast is presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. You have heard us talk so long about 70 plus years of Ed Morse quality and service throughout Florida from family-owned dealerships. And that's what Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon are. Family-owned dealerships, your Hillsborough County Cadillac dealerships at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher. The Mission Morse summer event continues. Don't miss new 2018 ATS sedans, only $339, zero down, or get 0% financing 60 months, plus $2,000 down payment assistance on all new 2018s. Hurry to Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, or even faster, get to edmorsecadillactampa.com. See the dealer for all the details. And at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, right there, Causeway Boulevard. We have been out there to the dealership. It is fantastic. They have their own Mission Morse summer event. They are out to sell 3,000 vehicles in 60 days with the guaranteed lowest prices, all backed by Morse with their price protection promise. Full details, edmorse.com/promise. edmorsecadillacbrandon.com is the website, edmorsecadillacbrandon.com. Of course, you always hear us mention Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, Ira Kaufman. He's always wearing the gear all over town. He's got some new gear coming for training camp. And, you know, I've purchased two vehicles from Ed Morse since 2011. My daughter even got her first car just last year from Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, a pre-owned Saturn. So great pre-owned selection as well. Now, the Bourbon Street Takeover that we have talked about from fanretreat.com, it is up. It is on. This is the road trip of the season with the Stick Carriers, with Joe, Lee DeCamper, specifically Ira Kaufman. So many fans. People are already booking right at fanretreat.com. It is pretty easy. Go to fanretreat.com. Look for a popular, you'll see right on the homepage there, popular retreat. Click on it. You'll get the information. You register on the site. And register doesn't mean you have to buy anything. You can get all the details. Look at the flights. Look at the tickets. There are discount opportunities coming. Fanretreat.com, once you sign in, is going to be emailing out some discount offers. You can use your Joe Bucks Fan discount code. Inexpensive road trip, opening day, the first big fan retreat with the Stick Carriers, Justin Pulowski, Joe Bucks Fan, and Fanretreat.com is your home for tickets for all events, everywhere. Hotels, airline tickets, rental cars, one-stop shop, Fanretreat.com, Bourbon Street Takeover. It is going to be wild. Here is Ira. Happy Tuesday, July 10th, the Ira Kaufman Podcast, starring the great sage of Tampa Bay sports, Tampa Bay's only Hall of Fame voter, Mr. Ira Kaufman. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeCamper is here. The summer marches on. Ira, welcome. You are looking good. How are you today?
I'm doing well. You know, my ears just cleared up because for 4 days, all I heard were firecrackers, ash cans, cherry bombs, Roman candles, and that was from the mailman. That wasn't for people in my neighborhood. But look, we got July 4th behind us. But more importantly, Lee, we're looking training camp right in the face. 2 weeks could be here before we know it.
Yeah.
The rookies report, I think maybe less than 2 weeks, right?
Right around there. You can tell the excitement in my voice. Nothing like going out there sweating like a dog watching guys work.
But you know what? This year, if I have my druthers, I usually don't have my druthers, but if I did, Steve, we'd have a little more excitement this year in training camp. I know the bleachers wouldn't be there, and I know that's another topic that we disagree on. But I'm just hoping that Dirk Cutter is looking for loopholes in those damn NFL rules that are all about safety and protection, and try to make this as physical a camp as we can get, Steve. I don't know that Cutter has that kind of flexibility, but if he does, I want a tough training camp.
I thought you were going to say Dirk Cutter's looking for a loophole to get out of his contract.
No, Cutter's got a lot of confidence, unlike a lot of Buck fans who are already talking about staring into the abyss. The abyss. You can't even spell it. Isbitz, but it's out there that 0-3, 0-5 are around the corner. The Kemper, you and I are going to get into it on this podcast.
Yeah, it's a fun topic. It's a disturbing topic. It's a great debate among Bucks fans, and I know it's under your skin. It's in Lee's craw, and we'll have some fun with it now. You were sort of back in a calm state, Ira, but now Tom Jones, your longtime friend, arch enemy of many Bucks fans, the Tampa Bay Times columnist. He simply stated, wrote a column saying, look, we're looking at 0-3. He said Bucks fans are staring into the abyss. It's not good at one Buck Place. He sort of closes it. I'll read it right here, Tiara. And the first 3 weeks look impossible to navigate. Right now, the abyss looks deep and wide and long. And a lot of Bucks fans feel that way. A lot of them say this is total hogwash. You've written columns about this, Ira. You've said, baloney, you can win games with Brian Fitzpatrick. It's not all about one position. Give me a break.
I get it. Lee, I get the pessimism. I understand it because we were getting some of this as soon as the schedule came out, before we knew about Winston's three games. But, Lee, how many times do I have to say it? One of the beauties of the NFL, maybe the main driving force behind its popularity, besides that it televises great, as opposed to hockey, you know, is the unpredictability of it. With the exception of those characters up in Foxborough, who every year, you know, if they win 11 games, it's a bad year. They're the exception. They are the exception, Lee. For example, can you tell me for a fact that the Eagles are going to go 12-4? Do you know that? They've lost a lot of people. We don't know about Wentz at this point. Foles is Foles. He could revert to form. A year ago, nobody's talking about Nick Foles. He's an afterthought. He's a journeyman. But he's a buck killer, but he's a journeyman. On a national scale, he's an asterisk, Nick Foles. All of a sudden, he's a Super Bowl winner. The Saints went 7-9 three straight years, Lee, before last year where they turned it around a little bit. So that's one of my main points. And my second point, I think it's even more important. Lee, this is supposed to be a much better Buck team on paper. It's supposed to be. They've added 5 defensive linemen. They added a new center. They added a rookie running back. That's supposed to make a difference, supposed to make some noise. If those things come to fruition, Lee, is it all about the guy that's under center? And by the way, Jameis Winston's 18-27. Ryan Fitzpatrick went 2-1 last year. So what I'm saying is, in NFL outposts, you think they're thinking about this in Buffalo? You think they're thinking the Bills are going to go 0-4? You think they're talking about this in San Francisco? They're all excited. They're all excited. They got a quarterback that's got all 5 games behind them. They're all excited. So where's the excitement in Tampa? No, instead of, whoa, it's me, we're looking at the abyss. I don't get it. I understand it, but I don't get it.
You sort of answered your own question. What did the Bills do last year?
Made the playoffs.
How did San Francisco end their season?
I think they won 5 in a row.
And the Bucks did what?
The Bucks had a 5-game losing streak and then beat New Orleans with on a last-second touchdown.
And they weren't playing any meaningful January games. As I like to say, the Buccaneers have been anchored in Buccaneers Cove, otherwise known as last place in the NFC South, all but 2 years since Chucky was fired. The Bucs should have improved last year when he added DeSean Jackson. You know, they were bragging up Swaggy Baker. The team imploded. The Bucs have given the loyal fans zero reason to get excited, except for they had a budding star quarterback who right now is gone for the first 2 weeks. The Bucs have given fans nothing to get excited about. Not even training camp. Like, hey, you get the roast at training camp, and Steve likes to sit outside and roast. Oh, by the way, we're cutting back the number of practices you can watch. There's no excitement because the team has not generated any
but
excitement.
But if you're a Buck fan, if you're really a Buck fan, the new season brings optimism. It's a given. A new NFL season is supposed to bring optimism. You're 0-0, Steve. I'm looking at you. It's like you're not buying what I'm saying.
No, not at all. I'm very optimistic.
Why do you have to be convinced they're going 0-3?
I don't get it. I'm very optimistic. I'm a fan. Let me clarify that. I'm optimistic that they can win a game in the first 3. Very optimistic. They should win a game. No coach can excuse away a 3-game losing streak without some sort of crisis of unbelievable proportion. Now, I don't see Jameis Winston missing 3 games as an incredible crisis where you can't go 1-2. Right now, they're not hurt. Right
Steve,
now.
And a decision you probably knew for months was coming.
Right, you got to be prepared. And I look at it this way. I was looking this up before the podcast, Ira. I even have some notes on it.
Oh, him and his notes.
So, you know, I come prepared with my notes. The Steelers, you know, they opened up, they squeaked out a win against the Browns on the road last year. By 3 points.
The Browns
made it 28-18 with a few minutes left, and it was a tight game to the wire. You know, week 3, you know what happened to the Steelers last year? They lost in Chicago.
They got whooped.
to a guy named Mike Glennon. So I don't want to hear that the Bucks can't win a home game because they're playing a couple of good teams. You've got the Saints. They've lost three in a row, home openers. And one of those was to a Bucks team that wasn't anywhere near as good as this team should be.
Two of these three are at home, Stephen. They're at home.
That's what I just said.
You guys know what their home record has been in the past decade, right?
But if you're good, that's not supposed to happen.
Right. You think the Bucks are good?
The Glazers do.
Well,
the Glazers do.
I'm glad I don't have their millions. Let's put it this way. I'm going to be in Vegas this week. I would have to be so drunk, so absolutely smashed out of my mind to put $100 down if they're going to win, they're going to go 3-0. Much less 1-2. I can't do it.
I don't remember Isbitt saying they're going 3-0. All we said is they should avoid an 0-3 start.
Yeah. Well, this is where I'm coming from. They should have won last year. They should have done all kinds of things. They should win more games at home than they have the past decade. I could sit here all afternoon and talk about should. If I put a gun to your head, say you got to lay $100 down, they're going to beat the Saints. Would you? Probably not. The same with the Steelers.
Well,
same with the Eagles.
If it's your $100, I'd bet it.
I'll bet $100 they don't go 0-3. I would do that if somebody came up to me.
Yeah, I can't.
Ask that bet. I'd do that in a heartbeat.
I would also.
$10 maybe, but not $100.
Yeah, I'd throw $100. I don't think they'll go 0-3. But let me get back to my paper, Iroh, because this is really the core.
And I'm not proud of that, by the way. Me saying it. I'm not proud of
it. You usually don't have that paper out until about nine minutes into the podcast.
He's waving his paper like Neville Chamberlain. You know, peace is at hand. Peace in our time.
Come on, Neville. What do you got?
Here's the thing. Frankly, I don't even know who Neville Chamberlain is.
He was the guy at the start of World War II in London that was
Prime
appeasing. He was appeasing Hitler. Hitler, do whatever you want.
I was thinking,
we're not worried about him.
And his famous speech when he came back from signing the Munich Accord with Hitler, which basically gave away Czechoslovakia. He shows up at Heathrow Airport. He waves a piece of paper like it's a white handkerchief surrendering, which essentially was.
And what did he say?
We have peace in our time.
Peace is at hand over there. Isbitt.
Well, at first I thought maybe it was one of the Neville brothers, since you're a big rock and roll fan. Or I thought it was Will Chamberlain's brother, and you were comparing me to somebody who's had sex with 20,000 women.
This is 1939 London.
I've been wanting to say this for a week now, Ira. Get this out of the way, then we'll go back to.
Is this about Bette Midler?
It's about music.
All right.
I know you're a music guy. You always Twitter.
I've been tweeting my music because I don't want people to forget about classic rock of the 60s, the greatest decade for music.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't want you to set yourself up here.
Go ahead.
Last week, believe it or not, only on JoeBucksFan.com and the Ira Kaufman podcast was Valerie Bertinelli evoked.
Yes.
And immediately you come up with this Phillips.
Yeah, the Phillips' daughter, John Phillips' daughter.
When you think of One Day at a Time, you don't think of John Phillips. What do you think of music related?
Well,
come on.
Oh, One Day at a Time. Well, you're not thinking of music. You're thinking of Valerie Bertinelli.
And?
Wait a minute. There's music and I don't know. Well, what's the
Who did she marry?
Hold on. Tommy Lee? No.
I'll give you a hint. Last year, this magazine referred to this musician as the last guitar god.
Eddie Van Halen?
Thank you.
And you like Eddie Van Halen. I got him in the second echelon. I got him behind Eric and Jeff Beck and Dwayne Allman.
I got
him second echelon. But I digress.
Well, didn't you draft him in the third round behind Stevie Ray Vaughan?
Behind my draft, I did very well in that draft, and I'm looking forward to it next month.
All right, Sage, here we go. Now, listen, I got some numbers for you. I'm going to read them, and you're going to tell me when I'm finished what they are. 0-8, 1-7, 3-5. 3-5, 2-6. What is that, Ira?
I guess that's the Bucks' starts in the first half of the last five seasons.
That's correct. So this is a brutal, horrible team in the last five seasons to start. Again,
they dig one hell of a hole.
Yeah.
Again, Ira, 0-8, 1-7, 3-5, 3-5, 2-6.
Wow.
If they pull another 3-5, 2-6 again in the first half, I will be the first one to say fire Dirk Cutter. Because it is unacceptable to pull 3-5, 2-6, 3 years in a row. If you do that, you are a bad coach. It just does. Good coaches don't do that.
Those numbers are glaring, Lee, even by Buck standards, glaring. And you know what? That 3-5, Lee, in 2016, it was so deep a hole that the five-game winning streak, you still couldn't make the playoffs.
Well, that's
the key to the whole thing.
And I'm not deviating here, but people scream about Winston and his record. Did he not win nine games in his second year?
They went 6-2 in the second half of that season.
It's almost like
and still didn't make the playoffs.
It almost like it never happened when people bring that up. Like, you know, the guy's been in the league 3 years. One of those years is a winning season. You want to run loaded?
Couldn't you make that same argument about Cutter? He's only been here 2 years, and one of them was a winning season. You could. And that's why I thought he deserved another year. So I don't have a problem with
that. Well, I'm a big believer in, like, you know, 1 year. I mean, my gosh, how many coaches Belichick would be on the street for one losing season?
You don't fire a guy after one bad year, Steve.
Well, he's still here.
And he's still here.
Nobody said fire Dirk Cutter on this podcast.
No, not on this podcast.
Well, you know, a season and a half bad, you're out.
Well, what I'm saying is three poor starts to a season in a row, three terrible first halves. That's inexcusable. You can't excuse a way around it or pretend it's a coincidence.
I don't disagree, Steve.
It's bad coaching, not having your team ready in the first half of the season. There's no reason why you should go 3-5, 2-6, 3 years in a row.
Listeners.
And Lee, the story within that story, that sad tale that Steve's describing, the first four road games last year, forget about this year, last year's first four, they weren't ready. They were not ready.
They either weren't ready or, they weren't ready. Minnesota game, clearly. Arizona, no question.
Buffalo was a bad first half, and New Orleans was a really bad first half. They weren't ready in the first four road games.
New Orleans, it was like they were.
That's unacceptable.
That New Orleans game looked like they were on Bourbon Street all night long. Holy cow.
Bad coaching. Now, the Jameis thing is interesting. The Bucs are so bizarre of a team defensively. So, 2 years ago, when they won 9 games, Jameis had the best third down defense in the league backing them up. A lot of those wins were on the defense. Yeah. And then the year later, they have the worst third down defense in the league. So the reality is somewhere in the middle, and we're going to should find that out this year. But I'm going to say this again, Ira, just because I know you have a memory like an elephant, and I want you to remember this because it's something you're going to hear a lot in September. In week 3, the mighty Steelers lost to the Bears and Mike Glennon at quarterback. I don't want to hear any excuses that the Bucs can't win a game. Glennon, we all know who Glennon is.
The same Bears team that came into Tampa week 1 and got thrashed? Absolutely embarrassing.
Same Bears team. So that's the NFL. 0-3 is unacceptable, but it's going to be fun. Some people are talking 0-5, Ira. What do you think of that?
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, Steve Smith went on NFL Network because they're 0-5.
Yeah, they're coming out of the woodwork, Lee. They're piling on. Now, Steve, is the impetus for all this because Jameis Winston is going to be holding a clipboard
that's a big reason.
For 3 games?
That's a big reason.
Well,
that's a big reason.
I'll say it again. Fitzpatrick, who looked bad in training camp, he looked bad. I thought he was terrible. I thought Ryan Griffin looked better. But the fact is, when the lights came on, Ryan Fitzpatrick played better than we thought he would.
Yeah.
So you got to respect that. He doesn't make stupid mistakes. And if the defense and the running game are there, Steve, why can't they win at least one, if not more, of these first 3 games? Forget about going 0-5. I mean, come on. Now you got them losing to the Bears.
You're not
going to
get me on the if not more, but they should at least win one game. You know, Brady Quinn brought this up. Lee wrote about it. And just in general, you know, Jameis, there is an upside to coming in week 4. You're fresh. There's no fresh film on you. You are a jolt of energy to your team if he does, in fact, come back week 4.
I'll say it again.
Four.
There's no guarantee if the Bucs are 2-1 that he's coming back in week 4. Well, I don't care what you say,
I'm going to say this, and I thought about this over the past week. Why I can't think of this in a previous podcast, I don't know, but
you got writer's block, Lee. You know, I understand that.
People, among other things, people claim like, it's going to be a short week. Not for Jameis. Jameis has a whole flipping month to prepare. For who's their 4th game?
Chicago.
He's got a whole month to prepare. I have no idea if this has taken place. I know Winston can't talk with anybody from the Bucs at all during that suspension.
Correct.
Can't come to the building. Can't even text anybody. Nobody. What's to stop Jameis from calling up Peyton Manning? Hey, Peyton, I know you're sitting around twiddling your thumbs. Here's $10,000. Help me out. Let's break down the Bears. There should be no excuse for him not being mentally prepared for the Bears. He's got a whole month to study the Bears.
Steve, in my mind, and I'm sticking with it, Ryan Fitzpatrick has his own future in his own hands.
I agree with you, Ira. You don't have to sell me. I just look at it as
he's got to sell me because that's one hell of a sell.
Because I think the dynamics change.
It's fun barroom stuff we're doing here. If Fitzpatrick beats the Steelers on Monday Night Football and plays pretty well, you have a choice, Dirk Cutter, for one game. You have a choice. Do you go with the hot guy or the almost guaranteed to be rusty guy? Who's not going to have a practice in pads because
with the bye week behind you.
With the bye week behind you. But I don't care about the bye week behind you. I care about the game that's in front. Bottom line, do you play the hot guy or you play the rusty guy who's not going to have a practice in pads? I go with the hot guy for one game. I go with the hot guy with my job on the line. We'll see. Hopefully we get there because it means they've won one of those first 3.
Lee, the fact that it's a Monday night game, could that factor into the decision to bring Winston back for Chicago?
Oh, suspended. Oh, well.
You know what I'm saying?
Bluntly put.
Actual snaps.
If for whatever reason, I don't give a damn, they're 3-0. If Winston's benched, either Cutter better resign immediately, or the Glazers will see to it that he's out of a job. Not right away. The only reason why Cutter's here is Jameis. And if he comes to the conclusion, like, you know, I failed, I can't coach Jameis, I'd rather have this worn-down Fitzpatrick who can't do a damn thing historically, he's done. He's toast, and you might as well just cut Jameis.
Let me throw this out there, Steve. You might find it in yourself to agree with me on this one. After week three, now you got the decision. Who you going with under center? Steve, may I weakly suggest, that at that point, before Cutter makes his decision, I understand he's the football coach, that perhaps there's a conversation between Dirk Cutter and ownership about what direction to go, and perhaps Cutter says, hey, I'm leaning towards Fitzpatrick. Don't you think there has to be a conversation at that point between ownership and the head coach? Don't you think?
No, because...
Or is it all on Dirk Cutter?
If the owners are coaching the damn football team, then it's all lost to begin with. Sorry, Joel Glazer, if you're listening. I don't want you picking the quarterback for week four.
I didn't say they're picking him, but they want to be informed.
That's what the conversation's about, Ira.
They want to be informed.
That's a whole different story.
That's different. Sure, have a chat. Talk about whatever you want. I don't care.
How'd it go the last time they picked a quarterback in the first round and they told the Glazers they're benching
him? This is not Clinton McDonald versus Sweezy. This is the possible future of your franchise. There will be a conversation, whether you like it or not.
Fitzpatrick's not a future.
I understand that, but what's going to give you the best choice?
This is how I want it to go.
Week four.
If Dirk Cutter wants to play Fitzpatrick, I expect him to call the owners and say, "Guys, I'm playing Fitz against the Bears."
I just want you to know that.
I want you to know. We'll sit down after the game and see if we go with Jameis after the bye for the rest of the way. That's what I expect the leadership of the head coach to be, and I think the Glazers would be fine with that. It's one game.
Be fine for like 2 or 3 months.
Does Light have any input? Light got any say in that?
Well, I don't know.
Should he? I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe not.
The only reason Cutter's here is Jameis. That's the only reason. And if he says, no, I'm benching Jameis for Ryan Fitzpatrick, it's not like he's getting benched for Bridgewater, who was a high pick, you know, something like that. Basically, Cutter is telling the Glazers, I can't do my job.
Lee, you're not blaming Cutter for Jameis going south off the field. Can't blame Cutter for that one.
He went south on the field 2 years ago.
Or off the field.
Off the field 2 years ago. It's not like this popped up back in February.
Well, Cutter was the head coach at that time. He had just gotten the job. It was 2 months
later. If that was the case, why didn't you bench Jameis last year? He had all kinds of reasons. You could have hid under the injury umbrella.
Because Cutter didn't know about this incident until
Until
BuzzFeed found out about it.
At worst, he found out in November.
That's what I'm saying.
And as I just said, he could have used the injury fact. You know, Jameis' shoulder is bad. He could have hid behind that and benched him. He didn't.
Well, we still didn't have a decision from the NFL league.
But you pretty much know.
We didn't have it. It was in the early stage of the investigation.
And I'm sort of suspicious they didn't know. You know, they said they didn't know. I'm sort of suspicious.
Dirk Cutter, he didn't cut any corners, Steve. He stood in front of the podium and said, I found out when BuzzFeed reported.
If they knew and they didn't get Jameis' suspension out of the way last year, then it's a rambling team of idiots over there.
I'm not saying they knew he was going to get a 3-game sentence. And you had a good source that told you they were expecting 4 this summer.
Yeah, but Steve's saying at that time, when you talk to Jameis and he says, guys, I can't remember what happened. I got no defense. I don't know what happened. Right then and there, Steve says, you got to get that cleaned up right then and there. Because you're facing a suspension at that point. If you got no defense.
What Lee was implying was that they knew before the BuzzFeed report. And if they did, they really screwed this up because he suspended this year instead of last.
And he could have hit under the injury. So, hey, you know, he's injured.
Ira, you know what was wonderful? It was wonderful hearing the opening of this podcast with your fine sponsors, Edmore's Cadillac Tampa and Edmore's Cadillac Brandon. And, of course, it was great to hear all those details about FanRetreat.com and the Bourbon Street Takeover. The commish was back on his podcast Monday with so much info. He is fired up. He is jacked up.
Boy, does he got a lot of energy, Steve. Woo!
You got to listen to that podcast, Ira. Now, it's an endless debate as to what the Bucks are going to do, and we just get to watch it all play out. It's so much fun. I'm just like so excited to see where it goes.
We're excited, and the Kemper's already thinking about the Heat. And there's no bleachers to give them cover. The Kemper's in trouble.
Look, not everybody loves training camp.
Fed me with so much ammo to be Debbie Downer. I mean,
you know, Lee used to have that vantage point, Steve, the last row of the bleachers.
50-yard line.
Looking over everybody, 50-yard line, writing down stuff. And now he's got to change. He's got to change that.
All right, here you go, Ira. I brought up the polling data. I'm going to play Zogby over here for you.
Whoa.
I will read you the question that ran on JoeBucksFan.com because we discussed this on the podcast. Question was, how do you feel about the Bucks eliminating outdoor bleachers from training camp at One Buck Place and now allowing fans to roam around the practice fields? 37% said they don't attend training camp. Okay, so that's the number one answer. 23% says they like it. 25% says they don't like it.
Kaufman wins.
14% are unsure. So my point was, I told you a lot of people are going to like it. It'll be interesting to see how they play it out.
You know, Lee, I'll say this. Does it have to be an either or? Couldn't they have kept the bleachers and let people roam around? How do you like that one?
It's not like they don't have enough real estate back there.
Maybe they don't have enough money. You know, only billionaires. Yeah, how much could aluminum bleachers cost? Must be millions.
Got to get some more season ticket people coming. Got to get more.
All right, Ira, let's move ahead to something else that's under your skin or under your shorts, however you want to call it. You don't like people keep walking around, or you see commenters, social media types, whatever. You hear buzz out there saying, it's a crotch grab. The guy was drinking. He didn't pursue the woman. She said no. It's no big deal. You don't like that.
Look, you say what you want about Jameis, but you don't go to that point.
You don't condone that.
Especially in the times that we live in. You know, I know you're going to bring up General Patton.
No, but it's vulgar. I don't care if it's 1944 or 2018. It's vulgar.
It's still indefensible, Steve. Now, look, we don't want to know half the things you did in college, Steve, if you even went to college. That's an assumption. But the things you did, Steve, you know, with some of those, the prom night, and, you know, we understand that. But James Winston's, he's a grown-ass man. Girlfriend who ended up marrying and now he's a father. And I know this happened in March 2016, but Lee, he was a pro then. He had a year under his belt. Cutter was his coach, and he doesn't tell the Bucks, you know, about his Uber account and the lion, the subterfuge. That makes it a lot worse.
The lion, there's two things that, one, you pass up on. With his background, you would think he wouldn't pull something like that. I understand if someone I've been around enough drunks in my life that there's some guys I know, coolest guys in the world. They get a couple drinks in them. I mean, they need to be locked up. They're just, so I get alcohol can change a person's personality. I'm sure you can find AA people. They would say the same. Doesn't excuse it, but I'm just saying it does happen. But the fact that he lied to his team and he lied to his teammates and he's always beating his chest. I'm a leader. You're no leader. Leaders don't pull that kind of crap. Leaders don't let Swaggy Baker run wild in a locker room until the second last game of the season when your teammate finally stuck up for him and you piled on. I think Jameis is the quarterback of the future. I'm behind Jameis as far as a quarterback, but this leader nonsense is just that.
Steve, you want to argue?
No, I want to argue. How dare you imply that I used to get in taxis and grab the driver's crotch and that I would do such a thing. I never did such a thing, Ira.
And, Steve, if you want to argue that Jameis deserves a second chance, that's one thing. But to try to diminish what it looks like, you know, 95% of the way that he did, because, again, he offers no defense. What are we supposed to assume?
And well, there's an important element there because you're saying diminish what it looks like. You're not saying, hey, I'm going to put my life on it. Jameis did this 100%. You believe something bad happened there. But your point is that you don't like people out there saying, fans commenting, big deal.
He's college age, he's
drinking. Well, come on.
I think that's taking it too far. Lee, it's taking it too far.
Like I said, with his, you know, what he, I'll say it. If he wasn't Jameis Winston, he might be in jail right now. You know, he had access to some very good counseling that saved him. If he was just some schmo on the street that didn't have access to this legal counseling that he had access to, you know, he may be behind bars.
And if he were Ryan Smith, he'd have a different team right now.
I mean, you would think someone that dodged a bullet like that, you would think.
And everybody, you know, Steve, a lot of people bring up the Ben Roethlisberger case. Now, he was accused of
a lot more heinous.
And you know what?
Premeditated.
I'm going to say it right now, Lee. You know, I'll go out on a limb, even with the Me Too movement and this kind of environment. For anybody to suggest the crotch grab is the equivalent of a sexual assault in terms of rape, I mean, that's just silly. You don't have to defend what he did.
It's vulgar.
To say that there's degrees.
Yeah, it's vulgar.
Yeah, you know,
it's not.
Some people say, you're making excuses for him. It's all part of one big thing. That's not true.
Vulgar, but it's not
it's
holding a woman down. And
it's still indefensible. But let's not go around. Anyway, I was talking about Roethlisberger.
I don't disagree with you.
You know what? And the Steelers stuck with him. And you know what? He had already won a Super Bowl. Lee, it's a business.
It's a business.
Winston doesn't have enough NFL street cred to get that at this point in terms of, and that's why I suggest if Fitzpatrick's playing well, don't be surprised if they stick with him.
You dodged the most important premise
I'm a good dodger. I'm a good dodger.
The most important premise you had was it's a business. Glazer's got a boatload of money invested in him.
They don't want to close the book on Winston. They will if they have to.
Weren't you a World War II draft dodger, Ira?
You know what? I think I was number six when I was about 18 years old.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and somehow they didn't call my number, but I would have served my country, Steve. I would have been right in the battle in Orlando or Jacksonville, wherever they would have sent me, I would have been right there.
Colonel Kaufman. All right.
Can you imagine me leading troops over a hill? Can you imagine? Follow me, boys.
Stay low. I'm low already. No, serious question, Ira, because you know what? You're a man of great age and wisdom.
Oh.
You know, you said, you know, in this day and age, grabbing a crotch, this day and age. Well, I think the fair question is, was it sort of remotely okay or remotely acceptable in the swinging 60s when you were out there in the field? Would this kind of thing happen?
I'm not sure it was remotely okay, but it didn't have the same wallop that it does now. And we can thank Mr. Harvey Weinstein for part of that. You know, he's the poster boy. Bill Cosby.
That was a little more than grabbing something. A little bit more. I'm being sarcastic.
Louis C.K., one of your favorite comedians, who apparently enjoyed exposing himself in front of young ladies. I don't even get that.
But you know
that.
What this guy, this Louis C.K. you mentioned?
Yeah.
He could walk right in front of me. I wouldn't know him.
You know what? He's a good comedian.
Is he?
Oh, he's hilarious. He's hilarious.
He's disgraced, but he's a good comedian. Just like Isbitz, you know, he's got a little sense of humor. You got to dig deep for it.
But is he disgraced, Isbitz?
Steve, it's a different time right now. And you know what? I think we're going to look back as this as a big positive for the culture.
Should I tell my Patton story?
It's a big positive because, you know, my wife used to work for the Port Authority, big, big company, and the secretary. She used to tell me stories how the bosses, you know, used to utilize their power on the secretary.
So it wasn't just Hollywood.
Let's go out to lunch. Let's have a drink.
The martini lunch?
What's the secretary supposed to say? She's trying to keep her job.
Wow, really?
You know, this guy's making all the money.
Maybe I'm naive, but that surprises me.
And it happened all the time.
You would have
done that.
Of course.
You know, if you had any power, Steve, you don't have any power. But if you did, you would have done the three martini lunch.
Should I go ahead and tell my Patton story?
Yeah, tell the
Patton. I never met George Patton. He was dead long before I was ever thought
about. The great George C. Scott portrayed him on
what
screen.
A wonderful movie. What a wonderful performance. It's like The Godfather. Every time I see it on TV, I can't help but stop. The opening monologue.
Oh, yeah, but in front of the flag.
That will go down in Hollywood history.
Before you ask, I didn't see that movie either. Go ahead.
All right.
Oh!
And then you like the part where he slapped the guy, right? He slapped the guy.
Not really, but the George Patton story I have. My dad was a naval officer in World War II, and for a while after his ship got blown up under his feet by a kamikaze, he was stationed in New York at the Brooklyn Navy Yards. That's where he met my mother. So my mother was a war bride. You know, the old World War II story. Well, anyway, apparently my dad, even though he was Lieutenant JG, he had some heavy hitter friends.
My father worked at the Brooklyn Navy Yard.
Well, maybe they knew each other.
He might have stole that woman away from my father over there.
Could have been. An Irish lass on the Upper East Side.
My father came up with, you know, offered her a commission. She wasn't happy with it. She moved on.
Well, my dad apparently must have known how to keep good company. Well, he did because his best man wound up holding the Minnesota Twins and the Lakers.
Ah, nice.
By the way, Bob Short.
Spell Knish over there, Mr.
Knish.
Very nice. Very nice. You may continue.
So anyway, somebody invited him to some big gala, a ball in Manhattan. This must have been after VE Day, which is Victory in Europe Day, because Patton was there. Obviously, Patton had bigger things to do during the war, but Patton was there. And about once a year and a half, he would show up in continental U.S., whatever. So anyway, Patton was there, and he's walking down this reception line, and there was some woman he recognized. He knew her, and he did what Jameis Winston was accused of doing and said something in the You got to keep my boys ready at night, Mildred, or something like that. And my dad couldn't believe what he did. And this, again, in a gala where you're with out in public, and Patton just walked up, boom. And I'm like, here's a guy to help save the free world. And apparently people didn't blink an eye.
When you're a general, you do what you want and with no repercussions. You, on the other hand, you couldn't get away with flipping the bird off somebody going down U.S. 19. You'd be locked up in about 3 seconds over there.
All right, Sage. All right. Calm down. Now, Ira, let's see. I got my my list here.
Oh, you got a sheet there. That's trouble.
In your column on Monday, you sort of made the point that, Kwan's got to really carry this team.
I think he could do more. I do. I think he can do
so,
more.
So, we saw what you wrote there, but do you really believe in your heart of hearts that Kwan Alexander's prepared to put a whole defense on his back, lead from day one instead of much later, and assert himself ahead of McCoy and maybe really the whole team on his back in his contract year? What do you think?
Lee, I do, and I'll tell you why. He is a leader. He is a leader. Admits he talks trash. Nothing wrong with that. We need a little of that around here. And he's shown tremendous hustle. Through his 3 years. Tremendous. We all remember that play in Atlanta.
Yeah.
That was an eye-opener. Downfield, stripping.
Let's just say the Glazers are getting every penny of their investment, Kwan.
And, Lee, I think the X factor in Kwan Alexander having a Pro Bowl season. And, by the way, I make a point that the NFC South, you got Luke Kuechly and Deion Jones. Deion Jones is tremendous.
He's almost underrated.
What a find by Atlanta. Yeah. Tremendous. So, I got Alexander number three. I think Jones right now is a little bit better than him. But those five new defensive linemen, they're here to bolster an anemic pass rush. We all know that. But guys like Bo Allen and Vita Vea, they're here to occupy blockers.
To set Kwan free.
And set him free to make plays. I'm talking about tackles for losses. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about the Arizona game where he's making he didn't play in that game, but the middle linebacker's making the tackle 11 yards down the field on Adrian Peterson. Kwan Alexander is very adept at tackles for losses. If you can get the freaking guard and center off his body. Bo Allen can do that. Vita Vea can do that. Maybe Unrein can do that. Let's see. I think he's poised to have a big year, contract year, looking for the big contract. He's not the only guy from that class of 2015 that wants to be paid. You got Marpet and you got Donovan Smith, mm-hmm. No question about it, along with a guy named Winston. But Kwan Alexander, I think he's going to be the first guy from that 2015 to cash in big time on a long-term extension.
Would not surprise me.
Yeah, I think he's going to be the first guy.
Because I think he comes across as a guy, he's really dedicated to the Bucs. Now, I'm not saying Winston's not, or Marpet, or Donovan Smith, but he just seems like a kind of a guy. It's like he's living on his dream, and he knows the Bucs won.
And Lee, he doesn't shirk from the leadership role, and you pointed that out better than anybody in that game at Charlotte. Who's the guy that stepped up in that very frosty locker room after Baker made that bonehead play offsides? It was Alexander. Mm-hmm. It was Alexander. And in retrospect, you would think that it's going to be Alexander going forward.
Yeah, I would not be surprised at all if he's the first guy signed. Because he probably wants to sign. He might just take a discount because he wants to sign. That's just him.
I'll tell you what, if Pierre Paul screws up, Alexander might get in his grill. That's how much guys got testosterone.
I don't know, Ira. I don't know. I mean, I'm not on my knees bowing down to Kwan Alexander speaking up in week 16 with the season shot. Third-year player, not first year, second, third-year guy.
You want him talking in week 5. I understand.
No, maybe if it took him to the second-to-last game of his third year in his career to do something like that, maybe he's not
Maybe he was waiting for somebody else to step up.
Well, but typically those leadership types don't wait. That's the point. They don't wait. They come in and that's their game.
Well, now he did it. Yeah. Now he did it.
Well, that's right. He's got to build on it, and it'll be something to watch right there. I wanted to run one thing by you, Ira, because I thought it's an interesting topic. I was probably going to write about it. Earlier this year, Jason Light said that he made a really neat quote, neat comment. He doesn't like guys with the five-star virus. He's looking for draft picks, free agents, guys who don't have that five-star virus, meaning – obviously, they're not the silver spoon kid from they worked their way up. They weren't drafted high. They're lunch pail guys, undrafted. They've got an interesting story.
I'm less interested in story than I am talent over there at the Kemper.
Results.
Yeah, and it's not a perfect formula. Swaggy Baker was an undrafted guy who worked his way up. There have been others. But you know what? I started wondering, you know, with the way Jameis handled the Uber incident and in general, is Jameis a guy with a five-star virus? And you have to sort of think, well, maybe he is. And it's interesting.
A guy who's been coddled, Lee, to an extent, enabled.
Protected.
To an extent, protected.
I see where Steve's,
I see that. I could see that.
I see where Steve's coming from. I would say no, only because you see the work ethic. And that doesn't mean you're a leader.
To me, that was always the saving grace. Always.
Yeah, you see the work ethic. You know, people say he's got a great football IQ, but it doesn't translate on the field with all the crazy stunts he pulls. Certainly doesn't translate off the field. If it sounds like I'm down on Jameis, I'm disappointed in him. I'm still behind him as far as the quarterback. The luster is worn off as far as I said earlier, the leadership stuff. I am not buying it.
Steve, is there any way that one of Winston's great qualities is his confidence in himself?
It's his downfall.
Yeah. He never, he'll never come out and say, you know, I stunk today. I got a long way to go. He's very, very confident.
And Cutter indirectly said that's the problem.
Could I suggest that this suspension puts a dent in that self-confidence in terms of I'm going to be one of the best quarterbacks in this league. I'm going to end up in Canton, Ohio. Do we know for a fact that his self-confidence level isn't going to be affected?
I don't think it'll be affected. I really don't. You know, we had a little bit of off-the-record time with Jameis, and based on that chatter, I think he's as high on himself as ever, and that's okay. I mean, you don't want your quarterback injecting doubt. They're supposed to be snap and clear, as Mike Bajakian says, you know, go to the next play and stay like a cornerback and just forget and move on. I don't think
Short
so.
Memory.
I don't think so. I mean, especially he's been a superstar for so long and so into it. I don't see it.
So I hope, you know, people don't get the impression we're stabbing him in the back, but, you know, his actions have invited speculation about many things.
You know, one thing that might support Steve's point about Winston and maybe the way that Dirk Cutter looks at Winston's confidence, at least prior to the suspension, and Steve's made this point before, every time we brought up DeSean Jackson, he's not getting the production, what's going on? One thing Cutter said repeatedly, and others have said, you can't blame DeSean Jackson. He's open. And one of the points that Steve's made for a long time is, you know, maybe Cutter's being very careful about DeSean Jackson's psyche. He's got that diva label. And on the other hand, he knows that Winston can handle it.
Yeah.
You know, which the implication is he's open and Winston can't get him the ball. He's not accurate.
I've always said that was Cutter walking a fine line.
And if Cutter didn't think Winston could handle it, he wouldn't answer it that way.
But yeah. I can't remember who it was, but I remember it came from someone I respect. They watched a lot of Bucks film. And they said the same thing, like, Jackson was open, and for whatever reason, Jameis didn't.
But I'll say this, going back to our original scenario, if the Bucks are playing well through 3 weeks, Fitzpatrick's getting the job done,
ring around
and Winston doesn't play the first time he's eligible, doesn't that in and of itself have to dent his self-confidence?
No, but it doesn't mean, just because Jameis is confident doesn't mean that confidence is good for him on the field. You know, I've had coaches before.
That's an interesting way to look at it.
I've had coaches before who say, if you're pressing, if you're forcing it, that shows you're not confident. Stay confident in the system. Don't force it. Don't push things. Stay confident and by not forcing. And Jameis is the kind of guy.
Let the game come to you.
As he processes, I'm confident, so I'm going to force it. I'm going to make it happen. But there's a lot of ways to look at confidence.
Steve hit the nail on the head for a couple of reasons. One of the biggest reactions Cutter had when they were studying his college tape right before the draft, and Cutter up at his pro day up at Florida State, and Cutter talks about, or has talked about this often, I haven't heard him talk about it in a long time, but Jameis said, there's no throw I can't make, and Cutter's like, you better think different, in so many words, you better think different. Now, real quick about the confidence, we've heard Cutter say this more than once. Cutter wants Jameis to say in so many words, you dumbass, that was a rotten play, and you do an audible. Jameis's confidence, Cutter calls the play, Jameis, we got it. And Cutter's like, not every play I call is going to work. But Jameis thinks he can make it work.
And Ira, what I'm confident in is that fans will be very pleased if they do three things. One, check the website for all the details on the fanretreat.com Bourbon Street Takeover. Two, subscribe to your podcast, Podbean, iTunes, Google Play. Go back and listen to great episodes that you missed. You remain ranked in the top 50, Google Play, all subjects. I actually explained this, or I mentioned it to my wife the other day, and she's like, all subjects? How is that possible?
Skeptical and a sage.
I said all subjects, all genres. And number three is tune in next podcast. Damar Dotson, going to get a little personal on some of the personal stuff.
He's got quite a story to tell.
And he's got quite a lot of neat stories to tell. So, Sage, we will see you on Spectrum Sports whenever that thing is on in the middle of the night. I know you're limbering up for your Fox Sports Sunday tailgate.
That's right.
New contract you've got going.
Look out, Ricky Reynolds. I'm coming after you, baby.